Electronic Intercept.
It's Blog Talk Radio.
Look, this isn't a Romulan labor camp. I don't have to answer your questions. And I don't give a damn what you think.
Welcome to today's episode of On Point with me, Don Allen, and my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you doing today?
Oh, fine, Mr. Allen. I think I'm watching folks still try to recover from what was a bad night out Tuesday for Democrats across the country. Boy, and particularly Democrats here in Minnesota, who I guess didn't see the Republican juggernaut coming. But we'll be talking about that a little later in the program. President, by the way, traveling abroad. A lot of criticism from Hannity and the Fox crew that Negro spending too much money, that he should learn how to do telephone conference calls. In fact, Michelle Bachmann, who won a third term up there in the 6th, up there in Stearns County, with where a lot of the All-American Boys neo-Nazis are operating, said that Obama needs to learn how to do a teleconference because he and his wife is traveling too much. Negroes should not travel that much, okay?
Yeah.
So it's ugly out there right now. By the way, we're getting ready to move towards a third night of rioting and disturbances and civil unrest in Oakland, California, where communities, and this is both black and white, are in the streets fighting the police, if you will. As we speak, hopefully we'll have something. I'll be checking on my electronic information devices. We may have something from the National Research Institute's people on the West Coast. We've been in consultation with them during the morning. We have a couple of field representatives of the National Research Institute in Oakland. It is very tense there. There's a little concern that this battle may move up the valley to Berkeley and the University of California, which would be very interesting, and across the bay into San Francisco and then down the peninsula towards San Jose and et cetera. The outgrowth, the anger, like the transit rail police officer, BART as they call it out there in California, who I'm not sure, by the way, that he is an American citizen. I think he's Lithuanian. Shot and killed a young African-American doing New Year's of this past year, if you remember, highly touted case. A jury declined to convict him of murder, but he was convicted of some lesser charges, and so white judge there, I guess, in Alameda County gave him the most lenient of sentences, 2 years for killing an African-American, so kind of showed. But anyways, they've been fighting pitched battles for the last 2 days in Oakland, and media has been trying to keep it down, particularly with all the tension that's backlashing across the country behind the election results. But it's not happy days are here again for the Democrats, Mr. Allen.
Oh, no, not at all. They are, like you said, the Republican and the GOP juggernaut just kind of snuck up on them and blindsided them, and they're doing a lot of damage control right now.
So. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. How are you calling the Emmers Dayton? By the way, Emmers is nowhere to be seen. They said he is allegedly taking his son up to Canada, which means that he, you know, has to cross the Canadian border to play hockey. I thought maybe that, you know, Emmers probably was having kind of a hangover from a, you know, bad night out. You know, he's got a couple DWI convictions.
Yeah.
But I guess that didn't mean anything. And by the way, another legislator, Republican legislator, who was caught on film, so drunk he couldn't even stand up, was reelected by a significant vote out there in the western suburbs. So it appears there's kind of a different standard for conduct in America, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, yes, there is. And I'm following this pretty closely. I hope we don't fall into 2011 and still don't have an officially elected governor for the state of Minnesota.
Or let's say certified.
Our certified, yes. Our
certified.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we're watching, like I said, I'm watching, I know you're watching it closely here, and we want to make sure that, you know, whoever gets in, that our interests are focused on as well as the rest of the folks here in the state of Minnesota. So,
well, particularly, Mr. Allen, in light of a, you know, deficit, shortfall, whatever, you know, nice word you want to use, or patent, if you will, we've got a, you know, a little over, close to $1 billion in shortfall Some of the prognosticators here for our international and national audience are saying that outgoing Governor Tim Pawlenty, who allegedly by constitution should step down in a way on January 3rd, Mark Dayton has expressed some concern because what some Republican activists are saying, notice the word we use, activists, are saying that they want to keep Pawlenty in, stall the certification revoke process, and the Republicans are going to make a move to cut the heck out of the budget, shoot it to the governor, he signs off on it, and then if whoever's certified to be elected, you know, we went through, what, 8 months here before we got Franken finally
yeah,
in as United States Senator?
Yes.
Yeah. You think we'll go 8 months again this time?
Well, it's always a possibility because, you know, they're pushing to have Emmer in there, and I think Dayton might have got the popular vote, whatever that means. But we'll see who gets certified because it's a toss-up right now. There's a lot of things changing. There's a lot of things going on. Our black or African-American elected officials are doing some catch-up because they were caught with their pants down around their ankles, and we just have to see what turns out here, you know? So.
Okay. Now, are there any meetings being called for within the African American community? Now, let me see. Now, we up here in Minnesota, again, for our international and national audience, we probably have maybe about 8 elected officials in the entire state. I'm talking about elected officials, and maybe not that many. Let me see. We have a county commissioner in St. Paul, a council member in St. Paul. That's Ramsey County.
Yeah.
We have 2 state representatives over in Hennepin County. We got a city councilman, and of course, we have the United States federal congressman. That's only about 7. And then, of course, if you got to count judges because they are elected officials, though they're not supposed to play in politics. And I think we have less black judges in Minnesota now than we did 10 years ago. And
right.
Some way or another, that to me, that seems to represent a decline, a regression, or whatever word you want to use. But we don't talk about it. But my question was, I mean, have our political elected leaders, are they going to be calling any meetings to kind of talk about strategy? Where do we go from here? How do we interact with a Republican-controlled and dominated legislature, or is that something that is beyond our capacity?
well, you know, I have not heard anything. And this is one of the things that kind of rubs me the wrong way because, you know, when this situation happens, normally there's a dog and pony show where, you know, they get everyone, you know, especially the people in the minority ethnic community in a room in a meeting hall somewhere over north in the Urban League or south somewhere. It's a balcony, and they want to tell you how bad Republicans are and what's going on and who to support and kind of guide you. And this time they're just totally kind of set back and not doing much of anything as far as community engagement on this piece.
Wow, that's a dangerous word. We'll be talking about that a little later on in this program. Here on Point, community engagement, memorandums of understanding, community benefits agreements, and et cetera, which is supposed to be an instrument that, you know, incorporates and brings into play the communities of color to get some of this massive action that's out going on out here. But you had pointed out to me, Mr. Allen, in a conversation yesterday and preparation for today's program, that the Republicans pulled another kind of historical first, not really since, in the case of South Carolina, not since Reconstruction, which is back in the 1880s, Florida, of course, we've had black Democratic elected officials, but actually we've not had a black Republican ever in Florida. I understand we have, is it Alan West in Florida?
In Florida, yeah.
And Tim Smith in South Carolina, two
exactly.
Young African-Americans will be going to the Congress. I guess will they be caucusing with the Republican caucus, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. I count on it. They pulled a good coup and worked together. Actually, Alan West in Florida also ran in unsuccessfully ran in 2008 for Congress down there in Florida's 13th district. And
okay.
He just sat back and got strategic about it. And he's actually been running since the day after the 2008 election for 2010. And
okay.
He built capacity. He did what he needed to do. He did, I mean, just a variety of stuff. And he's out there pretty well. And it was great for him to have this success. We have unfortunate things for losses for Deborah Honeycutt in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Honeycutt down there, she ran, you know, again this year. She ran in 2008. And against David Scott in Atlanta, and Scott pulled it off again. So, you know, we're watching here closely because these people are going to have to regroup and follow Alan West Lee.
Absolutely, because the Democratic-controlled liberal media certainly did not point out that there were two very competent, if you will, candidacies that existed there in Florida and South Carolina. And both Mr. Scott and Mr. West tiptoed right in there. By the way, our friend Star Jackson was not successful out in California, in South Central. In fact, was beat kind of decisively, but still she printed her name, if you will, left her imprint out there in that situation. She was not running as a Republican, really. She was running as an independent in what was a heavily Democratic district. But Star's I think she has a future.
Yeah, she does. And Mr. Edwards, I neglected to tell folks, but I have a caller. Hold on one. Okay. That caller would like to call back, the 952 number. Please call back. Our call in line is 1-877-572-4288. That is the toll free number. And our local number is 1-347-426-3904. Both numbers are on and working live. So, again, you can call in at any time, and caller, I apologize for not getting to you right away, but, you know, we're in the beginning of the show here, kind of laying it out, but if I see you call back again, I'll certainly plug you right in.
Oh, yes, because we certainly are encouraging dialogue, exchange, transparency, and things like that, if you will. Mitch McConnell, the senior Republican senator, now being joined by Rand Paul in Kentucky, says that they are not bashful, that their sole mission now is for the defeat and the destruction of President Barack Obama. Race has apparently emerged as a much more significant piece of the strategy, if you will, a level of ugliness out there. I noticed that Fox has tried to play the little game, utilizing Juan Williams. You know, we didn't really talk a lot about Juan Williams, but, you know, Juan, who everyone is, you know, trying to have significant sympathy for within the liberal arena, actually, you know, made a nice killing. I hate to use that word, but, he got knocked off by National Public Radio, which I couldn't understand the violation of his First Amendment rights based on what he said. I mean, folks know that folks, you know, have a sense of terror when they see what they think to be Muslim people. I come up out of an era as a 71-year-old African-American. I know that, you know, folks got nervous when they saw black people. But anyways, Juan Williams picked up right after that. You know, he was fired at National Public Radio. Fox renewed his contract, and he got a kick up of $1 million. He's now making $2 million for Fox.
Yeah. And, you know, and Mr. Edwards, I had talked to a local Twin Cities psychiatrist. You know, and a psychiatrist is someone that is also a medical doctor, MD.
Uh-huh.
And we had a 30-minute long discussion about the Juan Williams thing. And she enlightened me to some things because, like you just said, you know, there were times when people were scared of black folks. Okay.
Yes.
And so what she said was what Juan Williams said, word for word, is a biological response. Okay.
Uh huh.
But he thinks in his brain, and that's how she looks at it. She says, that's what it is. She says, that wasn't slander. That wasn't racism, prejudice toward the Muslim population. You know, and she agreed with me when she, you know, I told her, I travel quite a bit. And when I get on an airplane and or if I'm sitting in there waiting to board an airplane, I can see, you know, I understand that this gentleman that might come dressed in the Muslim garb is a Muslim, but I look around, and the whisper campaign has already started, okay? So you know, you know, and people do think that, and it's kind of strange, you know, that they let him go for a biological response that he just vocalized, you know?
You know, I think that she certainly, of course, she's trained professionally in that particular arena and academic discipline. She's absolutely correct. I mean, when I saw the rerun of what Juan said, I mean, if, you know, folks like that controlled blog radio and this program, I guess we'd be off the air, because what I'm getting ready to say is that though I don't have that feeling and sense, but I'm like you and what you just said seconds ago, I know when I, particularly when I see Islamic human beings in their native garb or speaking with accent, et cetera, and I just look around me and I can see the kind of response. But I think last week we mentioned the fact that, hell, we're still suffering here in the United States with the fact that, and I think you gave an illustration on last week's program, you know, as black men, Americans, born in America, I mean, seven, eight, nine generations of lineage, if you will, you know, we walk across the street. I mean, you know, white folks get to pushing the locks on the doors and you know, white women grab their purses and, you know, white men look for police officers and et cetera. And it doesn't make any difference how you're dressed, how you're attired, if you will, and et cetera. It has nothing to do other than with the color of your skin. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
so
exactly.
When Juan Williams said that, I mean, I was like, well, you know, the guy's telling the truth, but I guess the truth is not necessarily a significant commodity right now.
No, not at all. I mean, it's just growing up, you know, and understanding that there is a level of racism in this country. And I mean, I couldn't imagine. Look at Don Imus, who said about the girls' basketball team, the nappy-headed hoes, who got his job back. Well, he got suspended, but he got right back working again.
And he got a pay raise. He got a pay raise, by the way. Yeah, he got a nice pay raise. Yes, he did. Oh, Don, oh, Donnie. Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Please.
No. And you know, you take a look at Hannity and that group of guys, and they've made a lot of money. And I tell you, Glenn Beck. I mean, Glenn Beck has made more racism along with Rush Limbaugh than any two guys I've ever seen playing the issue of race, other than, you know, corporate America. In fact, let me say about Rush Limbaugh, about our buddy Rush Limbaugh. They're now admitting to the story. I heard a excerpt. You know, a couple weeks ago, I don't know if he was, you know, snorting that crack again or whatever it is Rush Limbaugh likes doing. You know, he's a pill addict and et cetera, but he also smokes crack cocaine and et cetera. He made the statement that if he had the chance, he would beat Representative Charles Rangel, who, by the way, was reelected with 80% of the vote up in Harlem, that he would actually kill him, beat him to death with a shovel. I mean, he said that. And no one, you know, no one took Russ off the air. Fox, CNN, nobody else touched it. Apparently, again, it was, you know, some of those bloggers, some of our blogger friends that did what we have to do here at On Point, and that you've been our key person as our technical expert. You have to play it. You know what I mean? So now here it is, and I'm telling you, Rush Limbaugh went off, and he said, as far as he was concerned, if he ever got the chance, he'd beat Charlie Rangel to death with a shovel. I mean, it was like, wow, Jesus. And so everybody's been kind of waiting to see if Rush Limbaugh was going to be admonished, you know, and he's not. This is the same Rush Limbaugh a couple of days ago referred to the Obama administration as the Baboon Society. I mean, you know, it's wild out here right now.
Yeah, and you
But anyways, we want to make sure we give that number again, you know, particularly any questions about your take on the election, what you think really happened, and particularly we're interested, and even from our domestic and international audiences, what do you think happened here in good old liberal Minnesota?
Yeah, well, I think people got fed up. See, here's what I'm looking at. I was asked to participate in this forum on Sunday, and just before we went on the air, and you know, so I'm still kind of pondering that, because what's happened now is that, you know, you mentioned Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and a couple of other folks there. That
Hannity, kind of, yeah.
And what people...
O'Reilly, can't forget O'Reilly, my good O'Reilly, Irish friend O'Reilly, okay.
Now, this is a group of people that are in entertainment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the Republican Party, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So these three or four or five people have made millions of dollars off the entertainment out of the Republican Party.
Right.
They might, you know, they might not necessarily be just gung-ho for everybody in the Republican Party, but they certainly don't like the Democratic Party. But what they've done is they found a niche market to go in and get on the radio and just, you know, jump on board with this Republican thing, much like a comedian finding something to make a joke about that's funny and gets popular and makes $1 million.
Yeah.
Now, Here goes the what I'm trying to work out here is that you have the Republican Party, especially the Republican Party in Minnesota, that has, you know, they're on life support still. You know, no wins in the no wins in the 4th or 5th district, which is Minneapolis or St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have them taking over the state capitol. Okay.
And they also won, though, in what is considered to be even more Democratic than the 4th or the 5th, Jim Oberstar, out in northern Minnesota, out of the 8th Congressional. Jim Oberstar, who's served, what, 15 terms in the Congress. Oberstar bounced. So go ahead, but you know, broke into your train of thought there.
I'm glad you brought up Jim Oberstar, because this is one of the best things that could have happened. Jim Oberstar oversees the transportation oversight. Okay, you know, here in the Twin Cities, we have an agency, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, that has spent billions of dollars over the last 10 years, and less than a half a percent was spent with minority ethnic contractors. Okay?
Absolutely.
And so you're looking at a guy that's been in there, 15, quite a few terms, quite a few years.
Oh, at least 18.
At least 18 years.
Jim's been for at least 36 years up there. Institution. Go ahead.
Institution. So MnDOT has failed in succession for going on 18 years in a row to meet their goals to even hire a Black or Native American or Asian or Hispanic Latino caterer, that's a DVE, which they do have, to cater a luncheon. Okay, even at that level, they have missed their goals. And so you have this guy that's Oberstar who's just sitting there going through the motions, you know. And, you know, it's time. If things aren't working, if MnDOT is still running the same way, it's not only time for Oberstar to go, it's time for the folks at MnDOT and the civil rights, Bernie Aronson, Tom Sorrell to go, the folks at Met Council, it's time for them to go. You know, I'm talking about Peter Bell, Wanda Kirkpatrick. You know, let them go. You know, bring in another crew in there. So,
well, let me just say so that, you know, folks think we're not ranting and railing here at On Point. To remind folks, about 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, looking at my computer information, we had a gentleman here who has been, you know, in the forefront, and he had formed an organization called Springbrook. You remember Springbrook?
Springboard.
And, you know, the figures, again, for our national and international audience is that in a period from 2001 to 2010, in which the total DBE awards was $205 billion, the African Americans got 0.2%. In other words, 2% of a half a percent of a half a percent. Native Americans got 0.284. Hispanics got 0.133. Asian, Indian, Pacific Islanders got a combination of 0.129, 0.227. White women, though, did pretty good. They got 3.336, about $159,285,430. And I remembered when Mr. Chisholm, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, Lenny Chisholm, is that the individual?
Yes.
Who's the founded Springboard. In fact, he was in a meeting, you remember, on our program here at On Point. He talked about a meeting that he was at the time of the Black Congressional Caucus's annual session, which had to be September. And he was talking about a meeting they had with Jim Oberstar, or they were having a meeting with the Federal Department of Transportation, and Jim Oberstar told Keith Ellison's office, Representative Ellison, that he needed to get somebody up there and find out what was going on. Remember that?
Yes. Oh, yes. I remember.
Yes. And no one challenged us or refuted it or et cetera. And what Jim Oberstar basically later said to Springboard and others was that, you know, it was something that it would be looked into, but, you know, we had to be patient. Of course, we've been patient since slavery, but we had to be patient. Right. But I want to call people's attention because Mr. Chisholm has this on the website, which is Springboard's website. And I remembered it's www.sb501c3.org. And I thought that Mr. Lenny Chisholm and his group did an excellent job of taking the time to go out and examine this. It cost him dearly because he was forced off of a couple state committees that were supposed to be looking at disparity. Whoops, word we really don't want to use here in Minneapolis. And in fact, he was betrayed by a couple of African Americans on the Good Faith Committee. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
In fact, one of them was a candidate, a person, a little lady who had run for political office and told us she was about change, and she stood by quietly as Lenny Chisholm was forced off of the Good Faith Disparity Committee there at the state. So I tell you, there's history there. But go ahead, Mr. Allen, your additional thoughts here.
Well, no, I look forward to dealing with the Republicans that are coming in, because I think that they see a way to strategically mount an attack, because, you know, things have been running the same way for so long. And I'm not talking about at the presidential level or anything. I'm just talking about locally here. You know, let's shake some things up and make some things happen. You know, it's yet to be seen. Traditionally, the Republicans, you know, don't give a damn about the African American and minority ethnic community, but I think
sounded like case, Clark Gable and Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. And so,
sir,
they're going to have to, because if they want to see, 2012 is going to be the tipping point for the 4th congressional district here in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, and the 5th congressional district here in Minneapolis. And
right.
So, I'm thinking that they've wisened up a little bit to understand that the attack that you're going to have to mount started the day after the November 2nd election, okay?
Okay.
You have to raise funds. It takes money to win a campaign. Michelle Bachmann is a prime example, okay? Michelle Bachmann, Terrell Clark here in Minnesota, was the most expensive congressional campaign in history.
Yes, it was.
History.
Yes, it was. The little old 6th district, which is just north here of us, and we call the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, primarily up in Stearns County, up around there, St. Cloud, Monticello, and et cetera. And by the way, a hotbed of anti-black activity, as those residents and students at St. Cloud State and the residents, African-American residents who reside in St. Cloud and Wake Park and et cetera. I mean, the Billy Joe Bobs are heavy up in there, and there have been some real peculiar things going on. But Michelle Bachmann has really developed a enclave up there, and she was pretty vicious. Though I have to say that Cheryl Clark ran a better than I expected campaign against her, but it's just hard to get beyond those hardline right wingers.
Yeah, I agree. And then just one more note on the Oberstar race. You know, he went after his opponent because his opponent, the Republican, said that, you know, he wanted to look at models in Malaysia that would bring jobs here to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of teased him about that. But if you look at the infrastructure in Malaysia, yeah, they don't get paid squat, but those models have worked and employed thousands of people in villages in that poor country. Yeah, they might make, what, 3 cents a week or something like that. But,
well, they make a little bit more than that. But, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm saying
or 6 or 7 cents on a $200, oops, Michael Jordan Air sneaker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe those models could be brought to Minnesota to give some folks. But up there in those type districts, in Michelle Bachmann's district, in Klein's district, in Paulson's district, they don't have the issues that we have here in Minneapolis' 5th congressional district. You know, those people are, it's a tough time, but I'm telling you, the majority of those folks are working. They go talk to their congressperson, they get action. You know?
Well, now let me correct you on something about Paulson. Got to remember now, Paulson is just in the third, just next to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the affluent areas of Edina and places like that. Peterson is probably the person that comes to mind. Peterson up in the 7th, which is Moorhead and East Grand Forks and up in there. And you're right, they don't relate to really what's happening. And asked our Native American brothers and sisters about how the Minnesota congressional delegation responds to their concern. Luckily, though, for Native Americans, they have a significant level of sovereignty, which every once in a while they know how to pull it out and dust it off, buddy. And you'd be surprised at the things they're able to do. By the way, I had a conversation at a Native American power broker, if you will, and he was talking in terms of the disappointment that's being talked about within other communities of color about the apathy, ineffectiveness of the black community and its leadership to get nothing as it pertains to the Big Five. So anyways, want to continue to take a look at this. Let me just repeat it again. Phone number, 1-877-572-4288. This is Don and Ron. This is On Point. We've been talking quite a bit here for the first half hour.
Yes.
About the election, the disaster for the Democratic juggernaut, and what we're basically, you know, hinting at and trying to, you know, get folks to see how they digest it, is that should the African-American community continue to put all of its eggs in one basket, that being the Democratic Party?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Is that really necessary anymore? And folks have to know, from my point of view, you know, I already said that I was somewhat of a conservative, but you don't have to be a Republican. You can stay a Democrat, but you should, you know, probably try to be an independent and do something different. As you know, one thing I want to say here, I want to find this here real quick so I can just, you just brought up a really good point there, and I'm actually on the computer in the other studio, and I want to pull this up. It's something that I wrote earlier in the week about the voting and the things that's been happening, and just let me look for the note here because I should have printed it up. Here's what happened. State Representative Bobby Joe Champion's district, which is 58B,
mm-hmm.
okay, there are 18,511 registered voters in 58B. A
right.
total of 8,600 actually voted, which means that only 47% of the 18,511 registered voters went to the polls in North Minneapolis. Now,
okay.
we have to try to figure out what happened to the other
53,000. Yeah. Right, right.
Now, and on a national level, there was 62% were blue-collar Republican voters who vote.
Mm.
And 55% were people over 65 who are afraid of big government. Okay?
Right.
Now, that's who moved the electorate. That's who voted here just locally in the Twin Cities.
Past Tuesday and absentee ballots. Okay.
So I have to go revisit Mr. Edwards. The different organizations that were started in North Minneapolis, like ImpactMinnesota.org,
right.
Color the Vote, what else there? And, you know, they had their little organization, so, you know, I had to, like, play with Facebook and put a little organization of mine on there called Flip the Vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people quite understood that, but, I have to have fun with that. But those organizations that were driven, DFL-driven, you know, did not, you know, do any justice to increase the numbers of minority ethnic folks, especially black people in North Minneapolis, going out to the poll. Now, this is a devastating thing because I think, in 2012, they elect another or they vote again for a Ward 5 councilman again, correct?
No, it would be 211 because yes, it would be. It 4 years. Yeah, it. I guess 212 would be. 212 would be the automatic race. But you know, I just got to tell you, Mr. Allen, in this context, I'm very conservative in my own thinking and reflections after 60 years or thereabouts. These folk don't want. They don't want. Don Samuels out. And it's really unfortunate because there's really going to be an upheaval in 2012. There's just no doubt about it. I think, you know, Mitch McConnell and others are clearly indicating that they're going to turn this thing upside down. And you're absolutely right. And let me say what further is disturbing, because the impact group that you talked about, the political PAC group or whatever, they actually had been quietly formed by the two black state representatives and the federal congressman way back in February of 2009, right?
Yes.
And had worked quietly behind the scenes, had gotten PAC monies in and other kinds of monies, were paying their friends, if you will, to work. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, they're working out of the office at 1500 West Broadway. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And basically what it was a feeding trough for the political friends and colleagues of those individuals. And so when we came up on the midterm elections, people, you know, then the no began to talk a little bit more about that and about what was happening. And then you started hearing these statements and advertisements. And, in fact, I remember on that radio station, KMOJ, on one of their few, they have very few public affairs programs, but on one of their public affairs programs, they had allegedly the executive director of Impact was in, came in, and was talking about all the wonderful things they were doing. Now, at no point did they ever give a hint that they had recognized that the Republicans were getting ready to take control of the Minnesota legislature. I mean, it was a turnaround that is unparalleled in Minnesota political history, okay?
Yeah.
And so, my thing has been for the last 10, 11 weeks with Impact, I'm trying to figure out what impact did they expect to have other than to put some money in some of their friends' pockets and take care of some of their other activities and girlfriends and things like that.
Exactly, exactly. Because they had Impact Minnesota had no impact on the vote. Because if the vote was held today for Fifth Ward City Councilman and Don Samuels happened to be on the ballot, which he will be in 2012, he's guaranteed at least 51% to 55% of that 8,600 easily.
Yes, he is. Absolutely.
No matter how, you know, if they we're talking about this later too, closing North High or whatever,
mm-hmm.
people aren't going to remember that because the people that need to get out and vote are not being catered to. This is a Strawberry Hollywood, you know, group of folks that have no clue about going into the community and doing any grassroots outreach.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, Mr. Allen, and that moves us over to light rail or transit,
yes.
Light transit. I mean, the hitters, if you will, picked up $30,000 from the McKnight Foundation to allegedly do some marketing to make our communities aware of what was happening with mass transit, which is like what's going to be a $450 million project, allegedly, or whatever. Now, the West Broadway Association, which is right across the street almost from the Impact Group, were very much involved in playing out that role also. And what quietly has happened in the last 10 days here in Minnesota and also in Baltimore, Detroit, a couple other cities, is that about $80 million has been sifted through, about $16 million for each city. Minneapolis and St. Paul will split $16 million. A question was asked in a meeting the other night in which none of the elected political leaders decided to show up at. Maybe they were still suffering the blow from the Republicans. But folks said that the plan to distribute the $8 million, which was specifically designated by an entity called Living Cities, which is a group comprised of the 22 largest financial and foundations in the world, not in the world, was to help poor people and to help with jobs and et cetera, right?
Yes.
And we're now hearing that is the last thing that will happen. There will be no jobs that will go to black people, if you will. The jobs will go to white organized labor, which has been the heart and soul of the Democratic Party here in Minnesota since the merger of former Labor Party and the Democratic Party in 1944. And I was really taken back because I can well remember a meeting in January when, you know, it was the Dog and Pony Show was put together to get our minds right as an African-American community on light rail. When the question came up that very night at UROC about what is going to be the employment situation, what is going to be the opportunity to get employment contracts and et cetera. And people were told, over 200 people were in that meeting, sir, in January on a cold winter's evening, if you will, that discussion was premature. It's
mm-hmm.
now October. My calendar tells me it's November, correct?
Yes.
And the question came up in over the last 2 weeks, where were the jobs? Well, folks were told that again was premature. And then your organization, as well as the organization that I'm affiliated with, discovered a press conference and in Detroit, Michigan, at the African American History Museum, correct?
Yes.
Basically shepherded by Rip Rapson, who used to be here with the Belton administration and then tried to run for mayor and then kind of disappeared. He is now Rip, my man Rip, is the president of the Kresge Foundation and also a board member of the Living Cities organization. And the word has now gotten back that the deal has already been cut, that there will be no African-Americans of any significant number employed on any aspect of light transit. Now, I want to say this. That makes all the sense, Mr. Allen, which we have plenty of time here to talk about, the very devastating report that came out on Thursday, in which now City of Minneapolis and leadership are trying to do damage control on the disparities report. You know, one of the things to our listening audience that happens up here in Minnesota is that black people here are required to work for half of the salary that is paid to whites. This is not something I'm just saying as a general discussion. Go visit the report. Take a look at page, what is it, Mr. Allen, page 127?
127 and 139.
Yes, sir. And I have to tell you, my friends, and I'm really want to see if we can draw anybody out to give us a call at 1-877-572-4288, because what has been discovered by a white consulting firm in Austin, Texas, is that we pay African Americans with federal monies, with state monies, with taxpayers' monies, we make sure that we pay them half of what we pay white folks.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
It's right there in the report. And I watched Velma Corvell, the executive director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, basically try to ignore that and then lied about the fact that there would be, in fact, what she said there, by the way, for the listening audience, there will be no public discussion. Now, what you can do, I want you to follow this closely because we were sitting right there. What Ms. Corvell and the Civil Rights Department of Minneapolis said, that how you will gain access to this report if you do not have computer capabilities is that you can call the Civil Rights Department, who only takes complaints 2 days a week, okay? You can call the Civil Rights Department and make an appointment. Now, by the way, public commentary ends on December 4th at 4:30, okay? And what Ms. Corvell said, Mr. Allen, in that city council meeting, it was a meeting of the whole of the city council, she said, make an appointment, come in, we will take you to a small room where the report will be, and we will discuss it with you.
Mm-hmm.
When she was asked if there would be any meetings with the African American community, she said the intention was to meet with African American corporate leadership, but not the masses of black folks. Now, make me understand, Mr. Allen, what the heck I was listening to.
I'm trying to find a word that I can use on the radio to explain that what she's doing, you know, because you can't. You know, you have to bring it to the masses, and if not, it just goes to the same old the usual suspects, you know, and
yes.
She doesn't get disseminated because you know the Hubert A. Humphrey Institute did a report, I think it was 2003. I have to look it up. On the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights as a whole also.
Again, yes, it did.
Actually pointed at what was wrong, what was going on, what they needed to fix. That was virtually ignored. And so, I mean, I still call for the resignation of Michael Kip Brown, the investigative director, and the director, Ms. Velma Corbell, because they're not going to be, there is no active civil rights department in Minneapolis at all. So.
Now, we want to repeat again what we said here on point on this nationwide and worldwide program. The firm that came in with this report, which does business out of Austin, Texas, indicated clearly, concisely, without equivocation, that one of the things that happens here with the full concurrence of city officials and et cetera, is that when contracts are awarded, and we spend big money here in Minneapolis alone, that one of the things that he said, that Dr. Wainwright, John Wainwright, who has impeccable credentials, if you will, but he was joined by a very knowledgeable sister, Ms. Hoyt, who, by the way, declined to come here because she just did not have the interest in listening to the BS. By the way, this report, Mr. Allen, cost the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis, including black people who are only paid at half the salary as white folks, $500,000. This is a half-million-dollar venture that took 3 years longer than it was supposed to, and violated federal and state statute with respect that you're supposed to do a disparity study every 5 years, according to Dr. Wainwright. But what Dr. Wainwright said something interesting. He said, what's happened here in Minnesota, he says, is that in contracts awarded by the city of Minneapolis, which is in the billions, he said the African-American community receives one half of a percent of the $520 billion.
Yeah, and, you know, I was reading a piece out of that same report, Mr. Edwards, because I was looking at from 2003 to 2007, established firms owned by women or minorities got 5.5% of the dollar value of city purchasing contracts, while they make up nearly 22% of the available pool.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely. By the way, the name of the report, for those of you that have the technical capabilities and access, the State of Minority and Women-Owned Business Enterprise Evidence from Minneapolis, correct? And it was the entity or a consultant firm was NERA out of Austin, Texas.
Yes.
And it's just a sad commentary. Now, there was a small story in Friday's edition of the major paper here, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, I think it was Steve Brandt, who I saw in the meeting that morning. Even Steve Brandt, who was of a fairly conservative persuasion, really had trouble crafting the right kind of story and putting the right twist on it based on the presentation by Dr. Wainwright.
Yep, exactly.
You know, now, a number of council members indicated how deplorable this was and how upset they were and how embarrassing it was and et cetera. And I thought, well, why don't you tell that to some of the black folk that have no place to live in this city or whose utility services and et cetera have been cut out, or who are caught up in the criminal justice system because they've been trying to survive. Now, you and I, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, talked extensively here on Point about the report that came out of Washington, D.C. from the Institute on Economic Recovery. Remember that? And they made a formal presentation to the Congress on June 6th. And, you know, we never heard a single word from Federal Representative Keith Ellison or anybody else when that report about Bobby Joe Champion, Jeff Hayden, none of them said anything about that report. But I guess the argument was it was an outside entity and didn't necessarily deal with empirical data that, you know, we should recognize. But this report is from information gathered directly out of the archives of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. I tell you, Mr. Allen, it's frightening, but it's criminal what they have done to the African-American here in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100% because this is just, it's absolutely, I was just thumbing through the report here to see if I could find this other point that I read. You know, it's almost 300 pages long, and, you know, they're going to have to do some kind of community forums and talk to the community about and explain to us why after the 2003 report, when they were given suggestions on how to fix what was going on, why wasn't it fixed, and why now in this report released October 2010, you know, it's basically the same thing. There's nothing. Nothing's fixed. Nothing's working. Contract compliant units is non-functional.
Oh, it's absolutely non-functional. Yeah, yeah, yeah. By the way, on another political note on that for the monitoring that goes on from the city, you know that the head of the investigative unit of the for a number of years of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department was quietly terminated from the city after being bumped out of his position in the Civil Rights Department. He had bumping rights into another department. He went into regulatory services, and they forgot to tell him that his job was being eliminated. He was there for a total of 4 weeks, and he was put out. He was escorted from the courthouse just a couple of days ago. Ron Brandon, who was the head of investigation. Now, they say that Mr. Brandon has been making threats to tell it all as the former head of investigations, including the cover-up in both the Fong Lee and Dominic Felder murders by the police here in Minneapolis. But he also had a lot of information about the kind of cover-ups, the kind of under-the-table payments and et cetera that had been made to the Civil Rights Department over the last number of years from contractors and et cetera. And I think, Mr. Allen, what you just said a couple minutes ago is reaffirmed based on this study.
Yep, yep. They have to. It's just, you know, I was up there for a short time at that city council meeting on, I think it was like Friday morning there, and it was amazing to just listen and look through that thing even before I got up there and hear the total, you know, just disregard for the...
Thursday morning, by the way.
Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
These are all melting together. On Thursday morning, just to hear that total disregard for the community, because someone has to... Someone has to be held accountable. Someone is going to have to answer for this continued just downplay of these very important issues that deny people in the community these jobs. And again, like I said a couple of shows ago, Mr. Edwards, if you live in 55405, 55411, 55406, 7 or 8, okay, which some of those areas and those zip codes are designated by HUD as blighted areas or empowerment zones, I don't care if you're white, yellow, red, black, and white. Those numbers that miss you, you are part of those numbers. Okay.
And yes, people are. And don't let your political leaders or your elected officers tell you anything different. And I would just hope that some leadership in the African-American community would go out and get the report and call a town hall meeting like they call when it's time for them to hustle some dollars. To lay out to people just how bad it is, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen. But it's criminal. I mean, it's absolutely criminal. I mean, these statistics that talk in terms that the city has sat by and has given aid and comfort, if you will, they're complicit. They have known that even when African-Americans, and particularly African-Americans, are hired on these projects, that a deal is cut where African-Americans are paid. In fact, the actual number, if I'm not mistaken here, looking at the computer, 38.7%. African-Americans are paid 38.7% less in salaries than their white counterparts. By the way, the national average, because this is a national calamity, is 32.5%. Okay? African-American go to work on a job, same job, same responsibilities. He can have or she can have exactly the same skills, competency, and et cetera, and they're paid on average from 32 to 38% less than their white counterparts. Now, I mean, you know, folk walk around telling you, well, you know, why are you black folk upset? And, you know, you just need to make do with what it is that you're getting. But these are taxpayer dollars, okay? These are monies that come out of the hard working and hard earned salaries and compensations of African Americans. Who, God knows, if they made a decision that they were only going to pay 40% of what they made, irrespective of the tax code, they'd be put in jail. Am I correct?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so, but anyways, this is the disparities report. Velma Corbell has indicated in the presence of the city council that there would be no public meetings. Now, here's the trap, though. She's got to meet with the Native Americans on this coming Tuesday, on the 9th, at 11:30 at the American Indian Center on East Franklin. The reason is the Native Americans have, Mr. Allen, what is called an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, that's been in place for about 20 years. When the Native Americans found out early on through their staff liaison person who does his job what this report was saying, they invoked a provision within the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, and demanded a meeting, okay? Now, I watched Velma Corbell lie on the record on Thursday morning when she was asked, was there any intention to have any kind of public meeting, town hall meeting, with the respective community, particularly the most affected community, and asked if and explained what the heck had happened. And she said there was no intention to do that. She said she'd be working through the African-American Chamber of Commerce, the White Chamber of Commerce, and respected African-American entrepreneurs. Now, you know who the entrepreneurs are she's talking about, Mr. Allen?
I have no idea.
The entrepreneurs she's talking about are those who have become legendary in being involved in what are called pass-through programs. In other words, they get contracts and pass the money back to white contractors, okay? And there are two specific, well, there are now three, because we had one who emerged on the Twin Stadium and made $2.2 million, which was passed back to his white benefactor. But one of the things, though, that for folks listening in, you know what I mean, that Ms. Corvail proposed, and which the city council will take under advisement, and there will be a response on the 9th of December. There will be a meeting of the city council on December 9th to accept the recommendations by the group out of Austin, Texas. Ms. Corvail pointed out that what she was setting in place and has had discussions with the city council is that a specific group of African Americans will get together with the largest corporate firms and contractors and et cetera, and will enter into a mentorship program where these white contractors who pay you slave wages and demand that you pass everything back to them that you get on the contract will become mentors to the few surviving African-American business enterprises that are left. Do you understand what I just told you?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
<That's good.
laughs> You know, and that's the way government works up here in Minnesota. And that's going to be the deal. People like Richard Copeland, Thor, Ezell Jones, who was very much involved in the sham that was the building of the county jail, mm-hmm. in 2000, where he passed back $900,000 of $1 million that he allegedly received. Copeland's been legendary with respect to what he's doing. They will be the two prime stars, if you will.
Yes.
Along with Tri Construction. You know who Tri Construction is.
And you know, Mr. Edwards, I don't mean to take us off track here, but I just got some breaking news just popped up.
Okay.
There was a Somali shot and killed on Lindale Avenue South just after 2 p.m. on yesterday. Somali advocates outraged over fatal shooting of this 50-year-old man.
Yes, yes, so, yeah. An apartment complex in Bloomington, Minnesota, right.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Police said he was wielding a knife. Officer who was not accompanied by other officers said that he encountered the Somali in the hallway, ordered him to drop the knives. Now, they say that he had stabbed the caretaker in the building. Police officer said Somali refused to comply and was then shot and killed. Yeah? Yeah.
No, yeah, but with that, just real quick here, why not tase him? You know? I mean, I don't mean to make a joke out of it, but why shoot the man dead? Why not? They seem to tase a lot of black folks, but they kill them, but in this case, they're just good.
Well, here's the thing about tasers. If the officer, according to the news accounts, and just before we went on the air here at On Point, I called a source that is familiar with the situation. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've known from my long experience on the Department of Justice committee that presided over and watched the Mass Police Department for 5 years, you don't use the taser to kill unless you've got a couple of other officers in support of you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what's done in the case of both Quincy Smith and David Cornelius Smith here, two separate situations a couple years apart. In the utilization of the taser, Mr. Allen, unless you have a very older, you know, small, frail person, you don't want to take a chance that your taser won't do what's necessary. So you like to have 3, 4, or 5 other officers with you, and then you taser the individual simultaneously, okay?
Yes.
And so if the officer, the Bloomington police officer, was by himself, his decision was to use the maximum lethal force, and that is to pull out his Glock, if you will, and pump 3 or 4 into the Somali citizen, rendering him dead, if you will. So you kind of got to know the secret of how officers are trained, you know. So you basically don't use the taser if you decided that you're going to make the person expire, die, unless you've got 3 or 4 or 5 of your colleagues with you and they're also armed with tasers. Then, you know, you can all fire. Basically, you want to fire in the area of the chest because basically that will guarantee cardiac arrest. Okay? I mean, I hate to, you know, be that curt and dry, but it's a fact of what I saw for 5 years as a member of the Department of Justice's Special Task Force, Police Community Relations. I mean, I actually was in training sessions where the taser was used, and I mean, I would not let them use it on me. We had police officers, but they were insulated and et cetera. It is not a pleasant weapon, particularly the ones that we now use here in Minnesota and Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It will make you lose all of your body functions. You'll lose your bowels, your urine, and et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was tased when I was in the service, and I don't ever want that feeling again.
There you go. Now, as a member of the service, you had to go through that, didn't you?
Yes, yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
If you
had no choice.
You have to know how it feels. And for that short 0.00 whatever of a second, all I feel is that I got up off the ground. That's all.
Yeah.
The pool. So.
Yeah. I've seen it. I've been in 3 demonstrations. And just by the reaction and et cetera, I'm like, Lord have mercy, hope they do not use this on me. By the way, we have 30 minutes left, Mr. Allen, and the disparity study. Anything else we want to touch on that?
Sure. I have a report in from a group of activists today who actually forwarded this to me, Minneapolis Police Spokesperson Under Criminal Investigation, and talking about Sergeant.
Oh my God! Who was that?
Sergeant William Palmer, the Minneapolis Police Department spokesperson, is under investigation for assaulting Joe Rassenberg, a local self-defense activist, in the waiting room of office of Chief Tim Dolan.
When did that happen? A couple weeks ago, or what?
Well, no, this just happened recently. They have it formatted like it happened today, and I'm pursuing that right now. And I did talk to one of them. They said it was today, and. It's just really interesting. This gentleman who has a legal permit to carry a weapon was taking off his coat, and Sergeant Palmer saw a gun there and went after him and took the gun, but neglected to pat him down and get the snub nose out of his pocket. So
he was carrying at least 2 weapons. And
knife.
Now, Sergeant Palmer, you say this happened in the chief of police's office here in Minneapolis?
Yep, Chief Tim Dolan's office. Yes, that's what has been reported.
Well, now, Sergeant Palmer has a reputation. In fact, one of the reasons they made him public information officer to kind of keep him off the streets. In fact, he's been off the streets for actually almost a decade. He was the officer who shot and killed the peace activist Barbara Schneider about a decade ago in her apartment in Uptown that really raised the ire. Particularly the white activist community here, she allegedly had a small steak knife in her hand. These were one of those older apartments, you know, in those old Victorian types of buildings, and so, you know, a lot of the rooms are small. The officers had pushed her into the room. It was a small steak knife, not talking about a butcher knife or et cetera, a small steak knife that you would use for, you know, a meal. And Palmer, who had been working intelligence, with the intelligence unit for a couple years and had probably to some degree was involved with surveillance of Ms. Schneider, a young woman, young activist, gunned her down right there in her bedroom. And what happened out of that, the Barbara Schneider here in the Twin Cities, the Barbara Schneider Foundation was founded in her memory and in her name, and they've been pretty effective in dealing with problems, dealing with people with mental health. Because apparently the deceased had some mental health problems, as did Dominic Felder, who, by the way, a couple of years later was gunned down by the police in a similar manner. But Sergeant Palmer, yes, he had a reputation of being a rather interesting individual. Not the kind of person you want to cross. I'm surprised, luckily, that what was the gentleman's name, Mr. Rosen?
Let me go right back there. I was just jumping around. I got some more news coming in here.
Joel
Rosenberg.
Mr. Rosenberg is lucky that Officer Palmer didn't shoot him there in the chief's office. It'll be interesting to see what the cover up is. Now, by the way, on that thing of cover up, moving along, you know, we had a tragic situation here in the Twin Cities with the death of the Reverend Major Topps.
Yes, we did.
Who died a week after being beaten at a local church here in the north side. Now, we know there will be, you know, some people hollering and screaming and being critical that we made that statement. The only problem is, through the efforts of our joint organizations, Mr. Allen's news organizations and et cetera, the National Research Institute on my side of the aisle, we discovered some rather interesting practices by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who wrote 3 different versions of the circumstances leading to the death of Major Topps. Could you just walk us through some of those, Mr. Allen, and I'll just kind of give additional editorial comment?
Yes, I'll definitely do that. You know that IBNN News had broke the story late morning about the death of Major Topps. And It was very interesting because what had happened was Star Tribune's first story, and let me just go back up here so I can say exactly what it said. Their first story was Major Topps, colorful Northside promoter. Actually, their second story was Major Topps, colorful Northside promoter of education, dies at 61. And then they had two more title changes, and they ended up with Major Topps Jr., Advocate for Education, was their last title change. But what they did through those stories is they took out the name of the church, New Bethel Baptist Church. They took out some of the details on the fighting, but within the last story they did put in there that the gentleman who assaulted Reverend Topps of Franklin Rich said to the paper that, hey, I slapped him. Now, on the other hand, Mr. Edwards, we have confirmed eyewitness accounts that Major Topps was beaten with folding chairs, thrown on a table, slammed to the ground, punched repeatedly.
Right. In fact, let me do this, Mr. Allen, because I know that this is a very, very sensitive, almost dangerous issue here in the Twin Cities. Let us do this for the purpose of transparency and et cetera. Now, what I'm looking at on my computer screen is the documents also uncovered by your organization and the National Research Institute. What happened here was that on November 3rd, 2010, at approximately 7:50 and 29 seconds p.m. Central Daylight Time, the Star Tribune wrote a story. Authorities say activist beating at Minneapolis church was not what killed him, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that they said, they talked in terms that Mr. Topps, Reverend Topps, age 61 of Robbinsdale, died Tuesday at North Memorial Medical Center after having kidney problems, according to his family. Their story says, for those that want to chastise us, if you will, Topps was assaulted at New Bethel Baptist Church in what police characterized as a domestic dispute. Topps was kicked, punched, and hit with folding chairs, police said. Sergeant Jesse Garcia said Topps' injuries included a broken ankle. By the way, Sergeant Garcia is Mr. Palmer, Sergeant Palmer's counterpart. Okay? Now, at 7:50 on the 3rd of November, the article goes on to say, while the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office has yet to determine what killed Topps, the office's Roberta Glisshart said, we cannot support any rationale between the attack on October 24th, and Topps is dying at this point. She added that the office can find no reason that the police need to be involved. Now, all of a sudden, the medical examiner is saying, now, here's a couple things that happened. Major Topps, the late Reverend Major Topps, went down sometime around the 26th of October here in our city and filed or attempted to file a complaint. In fact, he filed a complaint, Mr. Allen, that was good enough to get a restraining order against Franklin Rich, okay? Now, also in the story of November 3rd, 2010 at 7:50 Central Standard Time, 7:50 p.m. Central Standard Time, there was a very in-depth discussion and description of how he was being beaten. Now, this is what the Star Tribune said. This is not what Mr. Allen or Mr. Edwards or On Point said. This was Paul Walsh, spelled W-A-L-S-H, Star Tribune's legal reporter. He's a legal reporter, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He said that a witness said that two men started arguing at a baptism Sunday, and the suspect, a much larger man, Mr. Rich, as I understand it, is well in excess of 300 pounds. Mr. Topps is about 140 pounds. A much larger man than his victim, she said victim, tossed Topps down the stairs leading to the basement, body slammed him on a small table, and was beating him unmercifully. We were trying to get the suspect off him, said the woman who asked not to be identified out of concern for her safety. Major is screaming at the top of his lungs. Now, later, we here at the National Research Institute was told by another reporter, Matt McKinney, who collaborated on the story, that they began to change the story and sanitize it when they reached the conclusion that because the witnesses indicated they were concerned for their safety, that they would not allow their names to be used. The Star Tribune indicated there was not the necessary probative value. Understand what we just said here. Probative value to give a honest description of what happened. And so we had what you read to our listening audience just minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, I'm glad that you broke it down like that because, you know, people have called me, Mr. Edwards, and said that he didn't get hit, he didn't get punched, he didn't get beat with folding chairs. Now,
yes.
You just confirmed what the Star and Tribune wrote. Now, again, this is not me or you, Mr. Edwards, saying this. I'm going to read from the public information report from the Minneapolis Police Department, number MP-10-325354.
All right.
Report date, October 24th, reporting officer David Wiesman. Last updated November 3rd, okay? Precinct 4 was where it was filed. Offense, assault, okay? Assault, significant bodily harm. Statute 609.223. Address, 1115 30th Avenue North, which we know as New Bethel Church, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The suspect assaulted the victim inside the church during the service. I'm reading right from the report, Mr. Edwards, not making this up.
Yes, sir.
Victim was kicked, punched, and hit with folding chairs. The victim was transported to HCMC via ambulance, North Ambulance Run Number AC034175. Suspect was gone at or on arrival.
Now, that's a police report.
That's a police report. And
filed by a sworn peace officer here in the state of Minnesota, right?
Yes, yes it is.
Later on, Sergeant Garcia and others said, after initially saying that a report had been filed, that a report had not been filed. And in my discussion with Dr. Baker, the chief medical examiner here in Hennepin County, Dr. Baker said that he had made the determination that there was no validity and that consequently he had informed the police that there was no need to involve the police. Police were already involved. When the ambulance arrived on the afternoon of the 24th of October, as the Reverend Major Topps laid bleeding on the steps leading into the church, the police became involved. The report, sir, that you just read to our listening audience involves the police. Let me tell you what I'm hearing, though. I'm hearing that a series of political discussions went on, that some from the Black ecumenical community approached the Star Tribune as well as the mayor's office, and an accommodation took place to protect certain religious leaders who were present when Mr. Topps was for all practical purposes, beaten to death to make sure that this thing was downsized. Oops.
Well, Mr. Edwards, no, for the safety of the two witnesses' names and telephone numbers on this report,
we cannot divulge them. We cannot divulge
them. I cannot divulge them at all, but there are two witnesses that went on record with the Minneapolis Police Department right here.
That's right. Now, let me just go back to my conversation with Mr. McKinney of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who was involved in the third and final writing and sanitizing. When Mr. McKinney told me that the police were not taking this as a serious issue, I questioned him on why he would say that and why he would report that and why he would use the argument that because the individuals would not identify themselves when everyone knew that the report that you just read, which was the police incident report that went into the Capers computer, okay, which is the crime system. If you would, Mr. Allen, for purposes of transparency, so we're not bother about listening to a bunch of folks texting us and et cetera saying we're bad people, would you please read the number that you read earlier that is the report filed by a patrolman Wasteman?
The report is, and I'm going back there right now because I'm jumping around here looking at it. Let me just get up there. I apologize here. Let's do this right here. The report number is MP-10-325354, which holds a detailed description of what happened and that the the assailant, who said he waited for police and said all he did was slap him, there was a detailed report here with two witnesses that it occurred at 1 o'clock on the 24th, Sunday the 24th of October at 1300. Public data, the suspect assaulted the victim inside the church service. This did not happen outside of the church service.
It happened just inside the sanctuary. He was beaten down the stairs, beaten into the basement, and then after people were pulled off the assailant, he hobbled up to the steps. Medical attention was called. The ambulance arrived. By the way, I was fascinated when I saw story number two with Mr. Rich indicating that he had stayed on the premises, because I was aware that the police report clearly indicated that when Officer Weissman and others arrived, the assailant had fled.
Exactly. It says it right here. It's in black and white.
Yeah. Now, let me say this also. I mean, and it's so tragic because the Reverend Major Topps was a very beloved figure. Mr. Ritz says that he merely slapped him softly with an open hand, yet he slapped him so softly that he broke his ankle. That was a heck of a blow that caused Reverend Topps to twist and turn in such a manner that he snapped his ankle.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. It's one of the great tragedies, but what happens, there are certain people who have political power in place. And this comes at an interesting time for the black ecumenical community, because we here at On Point are also aware that some of those of you in the ecumenical, black ecumenical community have submitted a proposal for $250,000 through and to Mortenson to monitor the construction of the now $40 million new district headquarters in North Minneapolis. And I repeat that figure again, $250,000 submitted a proposal. You were told by Mortenson to submit a proposal, put the money in place, there would be the necessary kickbacks and et cetera, and that these ministers and another so-called minister who doesn't have a church would be allowed to be the recipients of what on paper would appear to be $250,000 to monitor, for purposes of diversity and et cetera, the construction of the new Minneapolis Public School District headquarters. Oh, by the way, for the first time in over 40 years, the Minneapolis Public School Board, which will take the new board coming out of the elections of this past Tuesday, will not have a native-born African-American on the board, Mr. Allen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we should have incorporated that in our earlier political discussions. There will be no African-American on the Minneapolis Public School Board. There will be a gentleman who was born in Somalia, came here in 1993, coming out of one of the newly created two districts, but there will be no African-American, native-born American, on the Board of Education. They were all defeated in the election. Yes, sir.
We have a caller.
Oh, go ahead. Just got in on time.
Who am I speaking with?
Wow. Am I the first caller, brother?
Well, you're one of the best. But go ahead. Yes, who am I speaking with?
This is Ralph Crowder, man. What's happening?
Hey, Mr. Crowder, how are you doing?
Mr. Crowder, how are you doing?
Good.
Go right ahead. What's
good.
Up? You got about 6 minutes.
6 minutes? No, yeah, no. Right. I was just listening to y'all's conversation, man. It's a kind of bad situation with Major Topps. I was going to actually say, in the spirit of Mr. Topps, you know, there was I know he was kind of really engaged with a lot of the issues with the school system. And I remember a meeting at the Urban League where it relates to the issues of the public schools, where Mr. Evers, I believe you was there, I'm pretty sure of it, was a rainy evening, and a group of community members organized a meeting about the issues of Title I funds within the Minneapolis Public
Schools. Absolutely,
school.
And the Reverend Topps was there, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And within that meeting, Sarah Snapp, who's the director of funded programs for the Minneapolis Public School District, on a series of questions, and actually Major was one of them, publicly admitted. Now, this particular meeting was actually audio taped. So
yeah.
in the spirit of Mr. Topps, I can definitely present this in the public arena in the form of communication But you know, Mrs. Snapp admitted publicly in this meeting that race was definitely a factor of Title I funds not going to directly serving the kids that it's historically supposed to serve within the public schools. I mean,
that's
it was a
correct.
Pretty bold-faced admission.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm just listening to you guys' conversation about this situation with Mr. Tox as it relates to, I guess, these are the same kind of issues overlapping now into the construction thing. But that's pretty heavy, brother. I mean, that this is kind of indirectly or directly involved with the deal with the Minneapolis Public Schools and the construction. I mean, is there a tie that – I'm just listening. Is there a tie that you're trying to make with this particular incident?
Well, not necessarily, except in the situation involving the ministerial community, the way that they have encouraged a cover-up in the death of the Reverend Tops is consistent with their role of clandestinely and secretly making a request and submitting a proposal to be paid $250,000 to help the ongoing sham of diversity in the construction of the district's new headquarters. So there is a parallel with respect to ethical conduct.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I dig that. And then just real quick, I mean, so a lot of these issues are overlapping, man. You know, I mean, I kind of tuned in over the last 40 minutes, but, I mean, it just really, I'm not going to even say it appears. I mean, it's pretty obvious, man, that there's a great amount of corruption, man. Just really messy things happening within the city, and more specifically, I mean, beginning with our youth at the public school level. And I mean, it's just kind of an ongoing discussion of some real accountability, public accountability that needs to be adhered to, not only within the leadership of the public schools, but of course within the quote unquote using your language, Mr. Edwards, leadership within the community. I mean, this is just crazy, man. But I'm just checking y'all out.
We appreciate it, Ms. Crawley, and you know, you continue to be on point, because, as I said the last time you called in, I well remember the kind of attacks that were the subject of by the district. A lot of it managed from 807. Some of it managed from within the so-called Black Leadership Forum and et cetera, because the discussions had taken place that you had become a problem, if you will, with respect to attempting to advance the truth and the facts. In some respects, I hope that Reverend Tops was not set upon and beaten, ultimately beaten to death on the 24th of October, because he had raised serious questions about leadership and corruption within the Black leadership. I know it was not a domestic. I know that first and foremost. I hope that it wasn't an assassination.
And are you? Is it moving forward? Are you going to do some more kind of investigative research on maybe, you know, the root causes of this particular situation?
Oh, most definitely. First of all, we had to clear the air, because particularly my associate, Mr. Allen, had come under some rather interesting attacks via emails from people who maintain they're members of New Bethel, who were saying that none of this happened, not a single part of it happened. And so Mr. Allen, who can speak for himself, but it's important that we walk together, is that Mr. Allen had to produce actual empirical documentation, like, you know, Facebook, emails, and et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to understand that this police report is a bombshell. Because
right.
Supporters of New Bethel have said that the incident never took place.
Yeah, I mean, and I just want to let our listeners know nationally and internationally that we're talking with Freedom Radio News' Ref Crowder. If you want to check that out, there is a link on our Blog Talk Radio page, and go ahead and check out Freedom Radio News. But getting back on point here, I mean, the pastor of New Bethel Church, Reverend Clarence Hightower, called me up and says, you know, no, this didn't happen. It happened outside of the church. But, you know, have what you're saying on your blog, he wasn't brutally beat. He was just slapped. And Mr. Crowder, I'm looking at the police report right in front of me. MP-10-325354. That says the suspect assaulted the victim inside the church during the service, period. The victim was kicked, punched, and hit with folding chairs, period. The victim was transported to HCMC via ambulance. North ambulance run number AC034175, period. The suspect was gone on arrival. So,
wow.
That meant that he had fled, that he was not
yeah.
there. And I repeat again that
they
part.
They said, and at the, there's a postscript down here that says they recommend further investigation.
Right, right. And what we're saying, Mr. Crowler, is that between beginning late Tuesday afternoon into Friday, there were a series of political type meetings, both with the mayor and the Star Tribune and et cetera. And see, I don't think they knew that we had intercepted their online and that we had all of the stories, and that Mr. Allen and the Business News and National Research Institute had intercepted the police reports, and that we would be able to analyze what has really happened. And in the memory, and for Mr. Topps' children and loved ones, we hope that we can provide, as we did in the case of Dominic Felder, some semblance of justice.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Okay, my brothers. Just checking y'all out, man.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Crowley. Appreciate it.
Did you guys address what? Just real quick. Did you guys address at the beginning of the show your thoughts about the North High situation moving forward? Any predictions or anything like that?
No, but I will do it right quick. That Bernadette Johnson was just feeding everybody a bunch of fluff. North High School's gone, and she knows it, and she knows there will not be a reincarnation of a new North High School. It was a part of a double cross that was pulled as an outgrowth of a meeting the previous night, in which included one of our elected black officials who thought that they were going to be touted as having saved North High School. And when Superintendent Johnson got in the meeting up there at Webster, she just did a double cross on them. But we'll talk about it. We're committed to talk about it, excuse me, in more detail next Saturday. Thank you.
Okay, my brother.
Thank you,
sir.
All
right, take care. All right. Mr. Allen, guess we're going to wrap it?
It's been a
very informative Saturday.
Yes, yes. Again, another informative Saturday. We're down to 3 minutes. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to On Point with myself, Don Allen, and Mr. Ron Edwards. And tomorrow we have two things going on. Mr. Edwards, I was asked to be a part of a panel because of my conservative viewpoint or my Republican viewpoint or whatever they want to call it. And it's kind of an honor to be recognized and to be asked to be on this panel. But tomorrow at 10 a.m., we have to remember to set our clocks back tonight.
Yes, sir.
Like statement time, because I didn't want to miss this. But I've been asked to be on a radio station KFAI, which is 90.3 FM. And if you want to listen to anywhere in the world, you can go to kfai.org. That's kfai.org. Tomorrow at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, where there's a Blue Dog Democrat, there's me, and there's an independent, and we're going to toss it around a little bit about the election and if the Democratic Party is still good for African Americans, which, you know, as I say, I'm not here, I'm not in the Twin Cities. But also, later on that day, which is Sunday, tomorrow, at 5 p.m., if you live in Minneapolis proper, tune in to Minneapolis Television Network. That's Channel 17 for Black Focus with my co-host, Mr. Ron Edwards. We'll lay out some things in detail. What is the topic of tomorrow's show, Mr. Edwards?
Well, it's interesting because a significant part of the program is spent taking a look at the death of the Reverend Major Topps. Thank you for asking that question. Mm-hmm. That will be a major and significant piece of our program tomorrow in talking terms. And there was some information that it was not to emerge until after our Tuesday taping, but we talked in terms of the brutal beating of Major Topps.
Okay. And so, with that said, I'd like everybody to tune in tomorrow to both at 10 o'clock on KFAI in Minneapolis or anywhere in the world, and then in Minneapolis proper, Black Focus with Mr. Ron, Channel 17, which is Minneapolis Television Network and all the great work they're doing over there. And don't forget to pick up the Spokesman Recorder and also tune in to – actually, don't tune in. Visit the website, Independent Business News Network. That's IBNNnews.com. And those of you that are interested in internet marketing, the University of Minnesota at UROC is going to have a huge internet marketing seminar from 9 a.m. to 12 noon on the 10th, Wednesday the 10th of November, again, from 9 a.m. to 12 noon, and it is free, and you are invited to participate. With that, is there anything else, Mr. Edwards?
No, sir. Just want to thank our listening audience for allowing us to come into their homes and into their life. And to Black America, in light of what happened Tuesday, stay strong.